Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, as promised, we've got a breakdown of the defensive side of the ball following OTAs and mandatory minicamp. And there's a lot less uncertainty on this side of the ball compared to the offense. And let's jump right into it, Nate. The defensive line has a lot more depth to it than it did last season, which I think should give Bills fans some excitement. Looking forward to the 2018 season.
Yeah, for sure. The front office went out and they went out and got guys in free agency. And they really focused on the defensive line when they did this. And with Trent Murphy and Star Lotulelei coming in, Murphy's more of a linebacker, but he brings the edge rushing presence, especially on passing downs. And I'd really like what they did this offseason.
Yeah, me too, Nate. It's the big reason the defense wasn't very good last year in terms of, you know, yardage was because the defensive line wasn't getting pressure and they were just getting blown off the ball and teams were just cramming the ball down their throats running it. So I'm excited to see what Star Lotulelei can do in the middle there is the one tech, and you know that should shore up the defense and, you know, make them a lot better this year. But I think the biggest question mark is Shaq Lawson. You know, what do we expect with Lawson going into training camp and this season? Will he remain on the roster?
At this point, I would say it's more likely than not he remains on the roster. I think there's certainly a possibility of them trading him. I mean, look at the Reggie Ragland situation. I think you can compare the two, and if they think that he's not a fit for what they're trying to do, then I could see them offloading him, and they probably wouldn't get more than like a fourth or fifth round pick for him at the most. But I could certainly see that happening, but at the same time, he's been a solid run defender his entire career. He just hasn't been the pass rusher the Bills really were expecting him to be. And I think they want to give him, while he's still on his rookie contract, one more shot to show he can rush the passer. And it seems like he's come back in the season with a vengeance and is looking to really make a name for himself.
Yeah, I saw somewhere that he lost like close to 10 pounds, so he should be a little bit quicker. It sounds like he's kind of renewed his focus physically and mentally, which is big if you're, you know, being a McDermott, because the guy has loads of potential. I mean, he was a first-round pick for a reason. He almost fell a little bit in that draft to 19 due to the shoulder injury. So, I don't see any value in trading him right now, because even if he just has another okay season, I don't see his value diminishing at all compared to last year. So, I don't know. For me, there's an incentive to keep him on the roster for this season. I hope he has a breakout year now that he has some better teammates around him on that defensive line. The linebackers are shored up now. It's just, you know, we talk about that rotation on the defensive line. You know, he can really go all out, you know, the 50 or 60% of the snaps he plays, and hopefully he can get some pressures and some sacks to show that first-round potential.
Yeah, and I guess if he has a really good year, you can look at it kind of as a Kelvin Benjamin type situation where you could trade him with his fifth-year option or with it already picked up, and the team you're trading him to gets control for 2 years instead of just one.
Yeah, and that's, when is the deadline that they have to pick up that option, Nate? Is it about halfway through this season?
It's I think it's the end of year three. You have it's like the begin before the next league year starts. You have to decide, so you don't get to wait for them to play that fourth season. But you can trade. I think you can pick the option up at any point before then, and also trade them to a team. And then that team would also have the option of picking the option up.
Yeah, just from a personnel standpoint, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to trade Lawson now to only get a fourth round pick. Maybe you can pair Lawson with a late sixth or a seventh and maybe get a third, but I don't know, if I'm another team, I'm not giving up a third round pick for a guy that hasn't really shown his potential yet. We saw the Bills get a fourth for Ragland, but like you said, that's probably in the same neighborhood of what they'd get now. I'd rather give this guy one more shot for the whole season, see what he can do. If he breaks out, pick up that option. You can either keep him or see what the market is for him. I mean, if you can get another second or a first back form and you don't think he's really a fit in the locker room, then by all means, that's probably the best path forward. But I don't know, if I'm the GM of the Bills, I'm kind of waiting and seeing what happens with Shaq Lawson.
Yeah, I think in the end that's where I would predict they're going to go this preseason and in training camp. He's going to end up on the roster for week one. He's going to be on the team this season. And they're just going to kind of see how he does and how he performs, and then they can make a decision on him after the year, because there's nothing that says they have to pick up that fifth-year option. They could just keep him really cheap for another year if they wanted to or something like that.
So how many defensive ends do you see making the roster for the Bills?
If we're counting Trent Murphy as a defensive end, what position are we counting him as?
I think he's going to be more – he'll rotate into that defensive end spot on the strong side, but I think we're going to see him more lined up in Lorenzo Alexander's role, kind of as that strong side linebacker pass rushing role.
Then I would say four defensive ends were end up on the roster. I bet Jerry Hughes, Shaq Lawson, Yarborough, and probably one other defensive – someone else. It could be how do you even say that guy's name?
Odighizuwa.
However, that he is a potential of he's a guy who I think could certainly make the roster.
Yeah, Odighizuwa's kind of got that Eddie Yarborough feel to him. He's been in the league one more year. I believe he's a former third round pick, so he's not an undrafted free agent like Yarborough was, but he's kind of been kicked around a few teams, and you know, the Bills seem to like him, and you know, that's value for a rotational pass rusher. The other guys that are on the 90-man roster right now, I just don't see any of them making it unless they really outplay Yarborough or Odighizuwa.
I mean, two of those guys are undrafted free agents. And then, so I think it's really unlikely that one of them makes it. And then what's Terrence Feed? You assigned to a tryout contractor training camp deal. So I just don't think that any of those guys make the team.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they split reps in training camp going forwards. But I think what we need to be most excited about is the Bills have shored up the middle of that defensive line, so hopefully the teams won't be running the ball right up the middle for 7 or 8 yards a carry on them like they were in the second half of the season. And, you know, it starts with Star Latuile playing that one tech. They gave him the big contract. He has to eat up two blocks every play so the linebackers and other guys on the defensive line can make the plays.
Yeah, that's what I think Bills fans need to really be conscious of going into the season is if Star Latuile is not getting 4 or 5 tackles a game and having a bunch of sacks, that's not his job. His job is to take up a ton of space and let the guys behind him make the plays. So if Tremaine Edmonds is having a heck of a start to the season, it's probably because Star Latuile is doing his job.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's going to be fun to watch on film. Is, you know, after the game's over, when the coach's film comes out on Tuesday, we can see, all right, what is Star Latuile doing every play? Is he doing his job of eating up two blocks and not getting pushed off the line of scrimmage? Because that's what they're paying him $10 million a year for. And, you know, if he doesn't perform, Harrison Phillips is a guy that they drafted in the third round that fell way further than he should have, in my opinion. And I don't know, that's an interesting thing, because I don't see value in having 2 1 techs where maybe the rookie on the more affordable contract is better. So it's kind of a nightmare scenario for Bean if Latuile doesn't really play that well.
I do think, given the way the Bills rotate their linemen, Latuile is going to play maybe 60 to 65% of snaps most. Which means Harrison Phillips is going to get to play 25 to 35% of the snaps or somewhere in that range every single game anyway. I think that's a good place for him as a third-round rookie to start his career. Now, if he starts outperforming and earning more snaps, then great. But I think the Latuile is probably not going to fall below like 50% of the snaps in any given game, regardless of how he's performing.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this during the free agency podcast. Star Latuile is pretty much locked in with the Bills for another 3 years on that 5-year deal because there's just way too much dead money to try to cut him now. So the one tech is pretty much set. Kyle Williams, you know, he's aging, but he's still a good player. He's definitely not a top 10 defensive tackle like he was a few years ago. But he's going to excel in that 3-tech role still, I think, especially with a better guy next to him. I mean, it was just terrible last year trying to watch that defensive line stop the run. And I think we're going to see Kyle Williams play improve a little bit from last year, you know, depending on the aging process there. And I'm interested to see what they do to keep a fourth defensive tackle. You know, will they keep Adolphus Washington to be the backup three tech? That's kind of where he belongs. They moved him along the defensive line quite a bit, I think, last year. I'm interested to see if he makes the roster, if they try to trade him for, you know, fifth or a sixth round pick.
I would think Washington makes the roster. He's looked good, especially last year. When he played, he looked good for the most part, and he fits a need. And you mesh those two things together. I see him making the roster. I could honestly even see the Bills keeping five defensive tackles on the 53, and then just not dressing one every single game, and having that extra body there. Just given how much they like rotating their linemen and how much they value depth at those positions.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I asked you how many defensive ends you thought they would keep. I can't see them keeping, you know, 10 guys on the defensive line, just because that thins you out in other areas, especially if they want to keep three quarterbacks on the roster. If they do not want to keep 10 defensive linemen, I can see them trading a guy like Washington, you know, to free up a roster spot and pick up another pick.
That's a good point. Especially because they're probably going to keep four running backs, six wide receivers, and I could actually see them keeping all four of those tight ends. So that's, but I think nine on the line though is the least they're going to keep. That's the thing.
Yeah. And like you said, it depends what we define Trent Murphy as, because I see them keeping less linebackers, Nate. I mean, you've got, in the NFL now, teams are playing nickel. That's basically your base defense because you're playing it the majority of the time. So you don't have three linebackers on the field a lot of the times. And, you know, we saw in minicamp that Edmonds and Milano are out there every play. You know, that's the nickel defense. So what room is there? You know, how many linebackers are the Bills going to keep on the roster? You know, if we exclude Trent Murphy because he's more of a strong side linebacker, defensive end type role.
Excluding Trent Murphy, six. I think it's going to be Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano, Lorenzo Alexander, Tanner Vallejo, Ramon Humber, and Julian Stanford. And the reason that we're going to keep six is the three guys I said last are all good special teams players that are going to play every single special teams snap.
Yeah, that's it's tough because, you know, did you mention Deion Lacey too? Because he was another guy they brought in to be a special teams ace.
I think that in the scenario that I just described, Deion Lacey's not going to make the roster. If he makes the roster, there's got to be, you can't keep as many guys at another position. You have to say, okay, are we going to keep less defensive ends, less tackles? Or are we going to take someone off the offensive line? You can't keep him and keep extra depth at all those other positions.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nate. And they're not going to cut a guy like Tanner Vallejo, who they invested a draft pick in. You know, Deion Lacey, Julian Stanford, Ramon Humber, they're all veterans on, you know, cheap contracts. So you can afford to cut one of those guys without, you know, really feeling like you're missing out on a developmental player like Vallejo. So I don't see a lot of those guys rotating in on defense much at all, given that Edmonds is probably going to play close to 100% of the snaps, I would think. And Milano is going to be right up there too, because he's shown ability to, you know, cover the run well and be able to drop back in coverage.
Yeah, I think those guys will get snaps every game, but they're not going to get many on defense, and maybe only one or two of them out of that group will even get some snaps on any given game.
So, Nate, I know Lorenzo Alexander's kind of a locker room favorite guy, but is he value at his age and playing strong side linebacker when, you know, Trent Murphy can play that role? I think they're paying him something close to $4 million, and they're not getting that type of production out of him.
I think at this point in his career, his value comes from his leadership ability and not as much as his play on the field. But I think he still gives enough on the field where he can play maybe half the snaps or a little bit less any given game, and especially play on like first and second down, and maybe it's situational pass rushing situations. But I don't think necessarily, if it wasn't for his leadership ability, do I think he'd be on this roster? Absolutely not.
Yeah, so it's just, it's tough because when he was on the field last year, a lot of times teams would run play action fakes to that side because they knew he was going to bite and they know he can't get back in coverage and recover. So that worries me, putting a guy like that out on the field a lot. And as much as I like the guy, there might be some value in cutting him from the roster and freeing up another like $4 million in cap space going forwards to roll over to next season.
I think in terms of just financial value, yeah, certainly it's there. But I think you have to think about the fan capital and how would the fan base react if you cut a guy like that? And how would the locker room react if you cut a guy like that? I think it's more about that than the money. And I think for the Bills front office and Bean, the money's going to be gone anyway after this year, and $4 million is not, in the grand scheme of things, given the Bills are going to have over $90 million in cap space, it's not that much.
Yeah, you're right, Nate. I'm just thinking that's, you know, something I would consider. Like you said, it's probably an unpopular decision with the fans and maybe the locker room. It's just one of those things that doesn't make a lot of sense to put the guy on the field. And, you know, if he's not getting the snaps, that money's not worth it. But like you said, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter all that much for this season. I do have a question for you. If he retires or they decide not to bring him back after the season, does that count towards the compensatory pick formula?
I don't know the answer to that question. We can actually just find it out. But I would think no. But I'm going to look right now because I'm kind of curious.
All right, I can filibuster for you here while you're typing away using the Google machine. So, I don't know. Like we talked about, the nickel defense is important in the NFL these days. And that's why, I don't know, I can't see them keeping more than six linebackers. And once you lump in Alexander, Milano, Edmonds, that leaves three spots. And I think Vallejo's there. Stanford is there. Humber's a nice, you know, role defensive player. You don't want him starting, as we saw last year. We don't want that as your first option to play outside. You know, it blew my mind that they took, you know, most of the season to really give Milano the reps there. But as we talked about in the last podcast with the offensive line, it's nice to have depth there. But a lot of times the Bills have what you want as depth guys starting. So I like having Humber on the roster, but just not in a role where he's seeing any significant time. Unless he has to.
I agree. And like you said, he's a liability in pass coverage last year. It was so funny being at some of the games. You could just see where he was going to get taken advantage of the second they went. The offense lined up in their formation. But the compensatory pick formula does not. It only is for guys that play out their contract and go into unrestricted free agency. So retirements, injuries, anything like that. No, you're not going to get a compensatory pick. And that makes sense. That's why I said I would think no, because that would kind of be like insurance for draft picks that don't work out, you know?
Yeah.
A guy just retires on you after 4 years. Oh, here's a third-round pick because your last pick didn't work out very well. Like, that does that. That doesn't seem fair to me.
Right. I think the compensatory pick formula seems like it's more geared at, you know, small market teams like the Bills that lose a lot of players to free agency. So that does make sense that it works out like that. But going back to what you mentioned about Humber, where, you know, where we sit in the stadium with our tickets, you can just see where offenses go out there and try to put Ramon Humber on an island. I remember the Saints game before it was a complete blowout, Drew Brees audibling and putting Mike Thomas right across from Ramon Humber and just getting 8 or 9 yards every play at will for, you know, 3 or 4 plays in a row. So I think we're going to see that stop on defense as well now that you're going to have Edmonds and Milano out there most of the time, and those guys aren't going to be exploited like that.
Yeah, the difference between Milano and Humber in pass coverage is ridiculous. other things that they do, Milano's just a better player overall, but with the other parts of their game on defense, you don't notice it as much. But when it comes to pass coverage, it's night and day difference. And the way the NFL is now, you can't be a liability in pass coverage and play outside linebacker.
Yeah, and that's one thing that we know McDermott wants is linebackers that can run sideline to sideline, you know, stop the run, stop the pass. And, you know, if with the defensive tackle spots getting shored up as well, I think we're going to really see this defense step forward. You know, we saw flashes of it last year, but then they really get exploited up the middle in the run game or on just quick passes. So I think we're looking at the Bills inching their way towards an elite unit. I don't want to put them up there yet. I don't want to put the cart before the horse or, you know, be a homer, but I think McDermott and Bean have done a good job of building this defense, you know, kind of be the backbone of this team. And that's the reason why I think this team can't be that bad this year, despite, you know, how the offseason went.
Yeah, I think the most important thing for the defense this year is the fact that it's continuity. The fact they have they're running the same system, again, with this, most of the same guys, especially in the secondary. And the Bills secondary is going to be very, very, very good this year. And it's crazy for a bunch of those guys. So Jordan Poyer is a guy who actually, I remember seeing a quote from him that said, it's the first time in his career he's played the same system 2 years in a row. And that's what happens when you play for Cleveland, and that usually happens when you play for Buffalo too. But that, I think that is a huge thing for this defense. And if the front seven improves as much as we think they're going to improve, I agree, the Bills defense is going to be the reason they're not going to be a 4 or 5 win team, and they're going to be closer to that 7 to 9 win range again.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that assessment now, given how the roster is constructed and, you know, barring any catastrophic injuries going into the season. So the secondary is definitely the strongest position group on the team. I don't think that's disputable. But what I am intrigued to see is what they do with the depth players in the secondary. And I think a lot of that hinges on what they want to keep at the other positions as well. So we know that Vontae Davis and Tre'Davious White are going to be starting in the corner spots. It seems like the nickel job is going to be up for grabs in camp. Phillip Gaines is probably penciled in as the starter right now, but do you think he's going to be the starter week one in the nickel cornerback role?
Maybe. I think week one, it's like more likely than not he is, but I think Teron Johnson is going to eventually get that job. I don't see the season going by without Teron Johnson getting that job.
Yeah, Phillip Gaines is more of the McDermott-type zone defense corner. You saw him really get exploited in Kansas City in man coverage. There's some horrible still frames of him in the first couple years of his career where he's, you know, looking the opposite direction and the ball's going by his head the other way to the receiver. So, I don't know, Chiefs fans and the Chiefs team didn't see that, sad to see him go. So I'm not going to be surprised at all if Phillip Gaines is, you know, a casualty in the cut down to the 53-man roster.
I agree. The one, when you bring a player in like that, I think it makes it, the way he was brought in, I think it makes it less likely that he's cut. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised at all, especially I think Teron Johnson's going to be a good player. He fits. His style of play is everything that McDermott looks for in a defensive back, and I just don't see the season getting too far gone before he's starting at nickel. I'd say by like week four, at the latest.
Yeah, and Nate, one thing I want to point out, it's interesting that they didn't bring back Leonard Johnson, who I thought was okay in the nickel corner role, and he was on a veteran minimum. I was surprised that, you know, with him being a Carolina guy with McDermott for a long time, why they didn't bring him back. And maybe it's they wanted some youth and they were planning on drafting a guy to play that role. But are you surprised by that as well?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was less surprised after they drafted Teron Johnson. Once I saw that pick, I was much less surprised. But at the same time, he was solid last year. I would imagine that he did exactly what they wanted him to do or what they expected of him for the season. That's what I would guess. And maybe they just didn't think he had it in him to do that again. I guess we're never really going to know for sure. But I think going with youth, especially if the youth is close to as good as the vet, never a bad idea.
I just looked up Leonard Johnson. I am shocked to find out he is only 28 years old.
I thought that guy was like 33.
He's one of those guys that feels like he's been in the NFL for like 15 years, and I guess it's only been, you know, a handful. That is shocking. It threw me off my train of thought.
Speaking of Philip Gaines, there is a video of Teron Johnson at the combine where he just is. He's in a drill. They're throwing footballs at him from two different directions. He has to like hop and turn around, and then he turns around the one direction and looks the wrong way, and just gets nailed in the dome. And it's actually hilarious. But I was thinking of that. I thought of that when you said about Philip Gaines looking the wrong direction and stuff. But yeah, he just got nailed at the combine in the head.
So, moving on. You know, I think if Johnson's going to be the nickel corner starter eventually, and a guy like Levi Wallace, who I think is going to make the roster as an undrafted free agent. I'm surprised he wasn't drafted. He is undersized, but he's just the guy that screams, you know, McDermott's team. And I think he's going to make the roster, and there's a decent chance that Breon Borders might too. And if that's the case, then I think Philip Gaines is gone.
Yeah, I would agree, because I think the Bills are going to keep four safeties, and Hyde, Poyer, Bush, and Siren Neal. And that's it. And then if you're going to keep six corners, that's 10 guys in the secondary. That's probably the maximum. I would probably think nine is where it's going to end up being. So five corners and four safeties. And I could see Philip Gaines being a casualty for sure in that situation.
Yeah, last year the secondary is where we saw basically zero depth, about the same as the linebacker positions. And every time Sharice Wright on the field, teams just went right after him. And what I like this year is there's, you know, players behind White and Vontae Davis if they go down, where you're not terrified of putting that guy on the field. So whether that's Gaines or Levi Wallace or Teron Johnson, I'm excited to see those guys go to work. And, you know, if they have to play, I'm not, you know, just keeping an eye on that player to watch the opposing offense just target them the entire game.
Yeah, I agree. One guy that I am really intrigued to watch, speaking of that, you want to keep an eye on them and you want to see how they do, is Siren Neal. I'm really intrigued to see what the Bills do with him.
Yeah, he is one of those safety, linebacker, cornerback type hybrid guys, right, Nate?
Yeah, he can play a ton of different positions. He's a bigger guy, but he can run. In college, he spent a lot of some time at linebacker, safety, corner. He played all three there, and you can use him. Like he's a guy who I could see the Bills using a lot against a team like the Patriots with Rob Gronkowski, and just having him follow Gronkowski all over the field.
Yeah, and that kind of frees up, you know, Edmonds and Milano to do the things that they want them to do and not have to, you know, mark a guy like Gronkowski or use a guy like Hyde or Poyer to cover them. You know, it certainly gives your defense a lot more options. And I'm really impressed with the depth they've been able to put together in the secondary within a season of, you know, being in control of the Bills organization. One thing that is interesting from a roster perspective is I believe Raphael Bush is on a 2-year deal. So I think he's going to make the roster as a veteran. Fellow Bills podcasters Joe Viscalia and Matt Ferbrin think that the Bills are going to keep five safeties.
Who is the fifth safety in this scenario, though? Because I see Poyer, Hyde, Raphael Bush, Siren Neal. And who else are they going to keep?
Dean Marlowe is a name that came up a lot in minicamp and OTAs. Granted, the pads aren't on. It depends on how well a guy like Marlowe plays compared to, let's say, Levi Wallace or Breon Borders. You know, where do they value that depth? Do they want it at safety or do they want it at corner because of how bad, you know, the side opposite Tre'Davious White got exposed last year when EJ Gaines was out?
Yeah, I would be surprised I mean, maybe they'll keep five safeties. I think at this point I would be surprised, but there are plenty of people out there that know more than I do about what's going on at One Bills Drive. I would just be surprised if they keep five safeties, that's all.
Right. And, you know, we encourage you to listen to other Bills podcasts because those are the beat writers. Those guys, you know, kind of have a finger on the pulse of the organization. Nate and I like to look at more of the analytical side of things. And you're right, Nate. It doesn't make sense to keep five safeties, especially if they want to keep those special team ace linebackers like Stanford and Humber and Vallejo and Alexander, too. He plays special teams. So I can't see them keeping five safeties. It just doesn't make sense to me. But, I mean, if they really like a guy like Marlowe, then that's how it's going to be. They're going to cut one of those linebackers.
Yeah, or you could take depth off the offensive line even maybe to keep an extra safety if you had to. And I don't – there's options for the Bills in that scenario. You could even keep – you could keep less wide receivers for that matter and only go with, like, five wide receivers. Because how many times the Bills go five wide – well, you don't know what Dable's going to do, but how many times are they actually going to go five wide this year? I can't imagine this very often.
I can't imagine them ever putting five wide receivers on the field. I would rather put Charles Clay or split Shady out wide than put, you know, the Bills' fifth wide receiver on the field for a play.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's another option for them if they want to keep an extra depth guy in the secondary somewhere.
Yeah, and another interesting thing is that 10-man practice squad. Who do they want to put on the practice squad and, you know, open up the possibility of a team swiping a developmental player? That's why I think Levi Wallace is going to make the roster, because that's not a guy you want to leave out on the practice squad. Someone's going to sign him if you leave him there.
Yeah, I think that's the case with probably a couple of the guys, of the rookies the Bills have. Like, Robert Foster's another guy who I think is in a similar situation. If he's on the practice squad, someone's probably going to take him. So, like, when we did our offensive one, he might make the roster. And I think that's another reason why.
Yeah, and when we're looking at that, you know, pretty lengthy wide receiver roster group now, there's a lot of guys that they can throw on that practice squad that I don't think anyone else is going to kind of jump on. You know, Ray McLeod, the draft pick, Austin Prohl. If those guys aren't ready to make the roster, I can't imagine there's going to be – and Brandon Riley. I can't imagine there's going to be a – you know, teams lining up to steal those guys off a practice squad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that definitely is something that has to go into their decision-making processes. Who are guys that we want to kind of protect? And even if they're not necessarily ready yet, we can protect them by keeping them on the 53, and then they can just not dress for games to start the season.
You know, and that's something they did with Logan Thomas when he converted to tight end. You know, they swiped him off a practice squad, put him on the 53, and he barely played, you know, the second half of that season when I believe Rex Ryan was still the coach. And then, you know, we saw him get some reps on the field in game last year. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because I do think they're going to keep a lot more players on the defensive side of the ball on the 53, just because a lot of those guys can make another roster if you put them out there and don't protect them. So I see them using more of the practice squad spots on wide receivers and, you know, offensive line, because they have depth at those positions. The depth isn't any good, but I mean, at the same time, it's not worth keeping more guys on the roster, in my opinion, that, you know, aren't really valued by other teams.
Yeah, I agree. And like we've said all throughout the pod today, the Bills defense is what's going to carry them this year. So it makes sense that the defensive side of the ball is going to be where the roster is more focused on in terms of numbers.
Yeah, because we saw what happened last year when there were injuries, you know, to the linebacking group and the secondary. Things just melted down because the front four was pretty bad. But, you know, I really like the depth they have this year. I think the defense is going to take a considerable step up. You know, I think we'll see them be a top 10 or 12 defense. And, you know, with it being the second year in the system for many of the players, I wouldn't be surprised if this is, you know, a borderline elite unit.
I think that's certainly possible, and it's certainly it's plausible, I guess is a better way to put it. I think it's a little bit too early to anoint them or anything, but I'm excited to see how the defense does this year, because if the Bills have any chance of making the playoffs again, It's going to come through the defense.
That's absolutely right, Nate. So I think this is going to be our last podcast episode until, you know, maybe a training camp preview here in 3 or 4 weeks. So we have some exciting news. We're going to launch the Bills Breakdown blog now, Nate. And we'll tweet out that link along with this podcast that you'll hear when the blog goes live. And we thank you guys for listening. As always, you know, subscribe, download, give us 5 stars, you know, so other people can find the podcast. Tell a friend about it. And now you can share the blog and check out some of the articles we're writing as well. And you can give us that feedback on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook @Bills Breakdown, or you can write us an email, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening, guys.